चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय अद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद
Hare Krishna. We will read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We will read from Antya Lila, Chapter 4, Sanatana Goswami Visits the Lord. And we'll read a number of verses describing a very interesting and very deep pastime of Lord Chaitanya with Srila Sanatana Goswami. So, first of all, we'll read, well, the focus will be on these two verses, 129 and 130. Thank you for alerting us. Can we turn our phones off, please? I know in some businesses, if you leave your phone on during meetings, you get fired. I don't want any of you to get fired. So we will focus on Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, Chapter 4, Sanatana Goswami Visits the Lord, verses 129 and 130, but we'll read some other verses also, which leading up to and even going beyond these two. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Sanatana Goswami. Yadyapiyo tumihau jagata pavana Thomas Barshe pavitrahaya Deva Munigana Tatapi Bhakta Swabhava Maryada Rakshana Maryada Palanahaya Sadura Bhushana. My dear Sanatan, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnava etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. So that's really the crucial point here, but let us read a little bit how things develop to that point so that Lord Chaitanya spoke like that to Sanatana Goswami. Well, perhaps just by way of background, we could mention that Sanatana Goswami just not a long time before this, actually, he and Rupa Goswami were working for the Nawab Hussain Shah, who was like the governor or governor general. He had a high government position ruling over Bengal or some parts of Bengal. So because Rupa and Sanatana were so brilliant, that Nawab Hussain Shah, he pressed them into his service. And one became like the prime minister, the other became like financial minister, minister of finance. And they couldn't get out of it. even though, of course, they're already great Vaishnavas, it's not like they were not devotees before. They were great devotees. But now they're forced to work like this, and they're mixing with this man, and because they're performing such important service for him, they spent a lot of time, they had to, or rather he would spend a lot of time with them. And so the very, in those days, caste-conscious Brahmin society, even to this day, the caste system is still going on there in India. Not as much as it was, but still in some quarters, it's very much going on. And particularly in those days, this is of course 500 years ago or so, it was really going on very strong. So the caste-conscious Brahmins, seeing how these two members of their community were spending so much time and working hard with this man and looking after his interests, this Muslim ruler, so they basically ostracized them from the Brahmin community. Yes, they kicked them out of the Brahmin community, and you know, they're very drastic about these things. They wouldn't speak to them, wouldn't enter their house, wouldn't eat anything cooked by them or their families. They were really very severe. So, just to give an idea, there's another completely different story. Elsewhere in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was a great devotee named Subuddhi Roy. And the same, Noah Pasencha, sprinkled some Muslim water on him. It's like it had been offered to Allah or something. I don't know what their process is, but it had been Muslimized, the water, in some way or another. So he sprinkled some on Subuddhi Roy, and immediately the people heard about this, and he also got ostracized. And he went to the Brahmins and asked them, and he explained, this is what happened. Some Muslim water got sprinkled on me, but I'm not a Muslim. I don't want to be a Muslim. I'm a devotee. So what should I do? And, well, different of them said different things, but some said, yes, we know the technique, how you can get free from the contaminating effects of this. All you do is just heat up a few liters of ghee until it is boiling and just drink it all. In other words, commit suicide. Then you'll be fine. So anyway. So, Rupa and Sanatan, they're in such a type of situation. But they managed to escape eventually by various means. They managed to escape from the Nawab Hussain Shah. And in the case of Sanatan, who's being described here, Sanatan Goswami, he escaped and he ran from Bengal to Jagannath Puri, which is 500 kilometers. But he just ran and ran and ran and ran. And he didn't eat properly, he didn't drink properly, he didn't bathe properly even. He was just so much in the mood of just urgently having to join Lord Chaitanya. So what happened on the way was that somehow You know, if he was going to take a bath, he'd just find a puddle at the side of the road, or just some little pond. And some of these ponds, if you've traveled around India a bit, they're really, really contaminated. The water just sits there from the rainy season until the next rainy season, basically. So it's really, a lot of it's really filthy. So he got some of this water on his body. As a result, he got some terrible sores all over his body. Oozing sores. And yes, they were so bad. Just really shocking to see, and what to speak of to have them. But he was so merciful. Well, in those sores, there are so many all over, front, back, top, bottom, legs, arms, everywhere. Maggots got onto those sores. Sometimes a maggot would fall off from one of the sores. He'd pick it up and put it back on, because he felt, I have to sustain this living entity. Anyway, he made it to Jagannath Puri, and various things happened, actually. But in this particular regard, Sanatan Goswami, he was always trying to keep away from other people, because he didn't want to touch the other people, because his body was just terribly contaminated, and if he touched anybody, some of the pus or whatever might get onto that person's body. So he would always stay away. We will now read a few verses here. Madhyana bhikshakale sanatane balaila prabhu balaila tanra ananda badila. At noon, when it was time for lunch, the Lord called for Sanatana Goswami, whose happiness increased because of the call. At noon, the sand on the beach was as hot as fire, but Sanatana Goswami came by that path. Although the soles of his feet were blistered because of the heat, he nevertheless went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There he found that the Lord, having taken his lunch, was resting. Govinda gave Sanatan Goswami the plate with the remnants of Lord Chaitanya's prasadam. After taking the prasadam, Sanatan Goswami approached Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When the Lord inquired, "By which path have you come?" Sanatan Goswami replied, "I have come on the path along the beach." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "How did you come along the beach where the sand is so hot? Why didn't you come by the path in front of the Singhadwara gate? It is very cool." That's the front gate of the Jagannath temple, main gate, and that's a very busy place. "The hot sand must have blistered the soles of your feet. Now you cannot walk. How did you tolerate it?" Sanatana Goswami replied, "I did not feel much pain, nor did I know that there were blisters because of the heat. I have no right to pass by the Singhadwara gate, for the servants of Jagannath are always coming and going there. The servants are always coming and going without interval. If I touch them, I shall be ruined." having heard all these details, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, greatly pleased, spoke as follows. And this is our two verses here. Yajapiyo tumihau jagata pavana tomas parashe pavitrahaya deva muni gana tatapi bhakta swabhava maryada rakshana maryada palanahaya sadhura bhushana. My dear Sanatana, although you are the deliverer of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristic of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnav etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnav etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. Lord Chaitanya is appreciating how considerate Sanatana Goswami was. Didn't want to contaminate those people on that, and by the entrance of the Jagannath Temple, even though that was the short route, and because it was through the town, it was shaded. But in order to avoid some aparad, he took the long way. And if you know the area, you'll know it really is a long way to go from there around on the beach and come right around. That's quite a long way. It's like at least five times further. And he got his feet burnt on the hot, hot sand. But that didn't worry him. What worried him was the possible transgression of etiquette by contaminating the devotees. So Lord Chaitanya continued, if one transgresses the laws of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next. By observing the etiquette, you have satisfied my mind. Who else but you could show this example? After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Sanatana Goswami, and the moisture oozing from the itching sores on Sanatana's body smeared the body of the Lord. Although Sanatana Goswami repeatedly forbade Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to embrace him, the Lord still did so. Thus, the Lord's body was smeared with the moisture from Sanatana's body, and Sanatana became greatly distressed. So, try and find this. There are various other incidents which happen. And then there's the final culmination. Let me see if I can find it. This is a bit later, actually. This is, again, the Lord speaking to Sanatana Goswami. You consider your body dangerous and awful, but I think that your body is like nectar. Actually, your body is transcendental, never material. You are thinking of it, however, in terms of a material conception. Even if your body were material, I still could not neglect it. For the material body should be considered neither good nor bad. What happened now? Anyway, what happened was was that Lord Chaitanya embraced Sanatan Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami, his body became completely cured on the spot and became very beautiful and effulgent. I don't know exactly where those verses are, but that's what happened. So anyway, we are focusing on these other two verses here about observing and protecting the Vaishnava etiquette, the standards of the devotees. Very, very important. Sanatana Goswami went out of his way to do that, even though it meant considerable discomfort for him. When the weather's very, very hot, like particularly, this is summer now, this is summer in Jagannath Puri, and it really gets hot on an ordinary day. It may easily be 40 degrees. And the sand, which is just exposed the whole day to the sun just blazing down on it, the sand picks up the heat and holds the heat, and you walk on the sand. Well, Sanatana Goswami did, and it burnt the soles of his feet, and there were blisters there, and perhaps it was bleeding also. But he wasn't really worried about that. He wasn't worried about that. What he was worried about was the possibility of committing some offense. Because there at the Singhadwara gate, you get all these pujaris, and particularly the pujaris and other assistants, Brahmins and so on, from the temple. I forget how many are engaged in service there, but it's hundreds and hundreds of them. So they come and go all the time. The whole day they're coming, going, hundreds and even more than hundreds. It's really a lot. And they just sort of come storming out of the gate. And they don't look to see who's coming. They just go, and you have to get out of the way. As one devotee told me, he was doing a degree in law in India, and they were doing, some part of the course was on traffic law, the rules of the road. And the lecturer wrote on the board, on the blackboard, in big letters, "Might is right." And said, "Just learn that, come back in 1 week. Come back in 1 week. And you've completed the course." So anyway, those Brahmins are like that. They just go away. If you're in the way, you just get run down and screamed at. So you're expected to step out of the way, not them. So Sanatana Goswami, he was in great anxiety that if they touch me, then their bodies will become contaminated. That'll be my offense to Lord Jagannath, and we can't do that. So therefore, he went to great lengths to walk the long, long, long way around, all the way down and out to the beach, and then along and then back in. It's quite a long way to the Siddha Bakul, Sitabakul tree. That's where Haridas Thakur and Sanatan Goswami were living. So but he did that, and he did it happily, because he understood it is the right thing. And my convenience, that is not necessarily the right thing. So Lord Chaitanya appreciated that you've taken so much trouble to maintain the standards of Krishna consciousness. And this is a very important lesson we should learn ourselves. Because here we are, we're practicing Krishna consciousness, everyone here, to one degree or another. Actually, many of you I know seriously are practicing Krishna consciousness. This is such an important lesson to learn, that there are standards, there are ways of doing things according to Vaishnava principle, and those standards really matter. You know the story Srila Prabhupada told about the one devotee in the Muslim time in India? He was a working man. Prabhupada told the story. He was a working man, and he was working with a number of others. They were all Vaishnavas, and they would all wear tilak to work. So then the Muslims took over, and the Muslim boss told them one day, okay, no more tilak. You don't come to work tomorrow with tilak on. Okay, otherwise, big trouble. So the next morning, they all came with no tilak, except the one man, the one devotee. He came with tilak, even though he knew about this threat. So the boss, Muslim boss, lined them up, and he inspected. Okay, no tilak, no tilak, no tilak. Oh, you've got tilak on. Oh. So after he inspected all of them, he said, okay, this man who wore tilak today, he can continue to wear tilak. But all you others, you can't wear tilak. But because he stood up for his principles, he can wear tilak. Anyway, of course, there is a place sometimes for secrecy and being undercover. There's a place to some degree under certain circumstances. It is something one has to use one's discretion about. But of course, you know, if you're a devotee, and particularly if you're really following sincerely, it is hard to disguise the fact that you're a devotee. We would go out distributing books in London in disguise. And even sometimes, would you believe, with wigs on. That was a bit much, so we wore like these peaked caps and woolly hats and things. But sometimes we wore wigs. So we'd be out there, you know, and it's all to disguise ourselves. And someone would be standing there, someone would walk up and say, are you Hare Krishna? Loud. And other people would look around. And the devotee would say, no! No, no, no. And the person would say, yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. I can tell. You're smiling. Anyway, in different ways, people could sometimes tell, because devotees just don't look the same. Someone asked a question on what? Sunday? Sunday. At the Rath Yatra, the questions and answers. When you become a devotee, is there a physical change in your body? You know, like, do you grow an extra set of arms? Maybe some extra fingers at least. So, my answer was, you know what my answer was? Yes. There's a physical change when you become a devotee, is that you're always smiling. That's a physical change. And if you stop being a devotee, then you lose that. And again, you'll just be miserable. Mr. Miserable. So, the thing is, maintaining our standards is really very important. And we should really try our best to do that. I know so many of you have to work and deal with that type of situation and those types of people. But still, don't become too, submerged under that whole influence. For example, we like to wear our Vaishnava clothes. Of course, at work, you may not be able to. It depends, actually. But anyway, you may not be able to also. So, because you are disguising yourself, because you are actually a devotee, that's what you are. This is how we dress. But now, because of the situation, you're disguising yourself. But when you come to visit Krishna, you don't need to disguise yourself. He may not recognize. Is this a devotee or who is this? if you're too well disguised. But as much as possible, we should try and maintain our standards. And as we see here with Lord Chaitanya, with Siddhartha Goswami, the Lord appreciates it when we maintain the standards. He uses the term etiquette, those behavioral standards. The Lord really appreciates it. It is not just like formalities. Just because we are devotees, we just do things in certain ways, just because. You probably remember when you were a child, I remember. You get into some sort of minor conflict situation with your brother or your sister or some friend. And you'd say to them, "Why did that?" And they just say, "Because." So we don't do these things just because. But there are reasons why we do these things. It all counts. Everything counts. Everything matters. And of course, on our levels, we are not yet on the platform of pure devotional service, spontaneous devotional service, that we are just so immersed in Krishna consciousness that in any given situation, at the drop of a hat, just instantly, some situation, just something just happens, and we just naturally respond in a Krishna conscious way. Not yet. I mean, if we think about it many times, we'll do like that. But sometimes something may just happen and we have to just react on the spot. But we may be inclined, just what may come out is a sort of material type of response, because we didn't have time to think, okay, now, so what should I do here? A more calculated type of response. So it is not that it's surprising, because we've been in material life such a long time and it is very deeply ingrained, different habits and attitudes and like that. So it is not surprising, and it's also not that we would just criticize devotees if they in a sort of spontaneous way, in a split second type of situation, just react in a way which isn't totally Krishna conscious. It's just one of those things. In many cases, it's just one of those things. And when the devotee gets a chance to pull himself together, then he may say, oh, why did I do that? And then try and correct things. But the point is, first point at least, is that we are very deeply conditioned. And in so many types of situations, we may tend to react in material ways and not like proper Krishna conscious ways. But as the devotee advances, and as the devotee becomes just more accustomed and attuned to the whole way of life and way of thinking and feeling and acting and relating of a Vaishnava, then more and more the devotee becomes naturally inclined to respond in Krishna conscious way. Until on the very advanced level, then the devotee is completely situated in pure Krishna consciousness and in the most natural and most spontaneous ways, just naturally reacts perfectly in Krishna consciousness to anything. So this is advanced Krishna consciousness. But we, in certain situations, if it were just up to how we feel like reacting or acting, just what comes out of us, then we might just do the wrong thing. Without great difficulty, we would just do the wrong thing, and because we're conditioned. So therefore, for us, in the earlier stages of devotional service, there is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. The practice, the development, this term sadhana, sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means practice, development. You're not developed. You are just developing. So, sadhana bhakti, practicing, developing, devotional service, vaidhi, according to the rules and regulations. So this means, it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita at length by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami in Madhya Lila. In Nectar of Devotion, it's also described at length that in those earlier stages, we have to practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which basically means according to the instructions of Scripture and the Spiritual Master. This is what it means. Being mindful, being thoughtful, considering, okay, what's right, you know, what's not right, what should I do here? And trying to do what's right. Even though sometimes what is right might possibly clash with what we might feel like doing if it was just up to our feelings. But we do the right thing. Even though the mind may object. So there's a verse it's actually in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Prabhupada quotes it in one of the purports in Bhagavad Gita. Sanatana Goswami says, Anukulyena Krishnanu Pratikulyena Bharajanam. No, sorry. Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikulyasya Varjana. There's six principles of surrender. These are the first two. Anukulyena sankalpa. If something is anukulya, means favorable for serving Krishna, then sankalpa, we accept it, we embrace it. But pratikulyasya, if something is opposed to Krishna consciousness, then varjana, we reject it, basically. Varjana means. So in Nectar of Devotion, I don't know if you can remember the example Prabhupada gives, first example Prabhupada gives of this. It's right in the, quite towards the beginning of Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada says that in the beginning, the spiritual master tells you, get up early in the morning. So when you go to bed at night, you think, okay, right, get up early in the morning. Yeah, all right, that's what the spiritual master said. But then the alarm rings early in the morning. And what happens? No comment. But you know what happens. But Prabhupada says, the right thing to do is, understanding that it's the instruction of the spiritual master, even though, you know, it is so common, it is really so extremely common amongst the devotees, that when the alarm goes early in the morning, it is really very common. Don't worry, you are not alone. That the mind starts objecting and giving various arguments and whatnot. Why you don't need to or shouldn't get up, etc. But we should get up because we know it's the right thing to do. Even though the mind objects. And then, on the other hand, if we see something is not favorable for Krishna consciousness, even though we're inclined towards it, but we're willing to give that up for the sake of devotional service. So like this. Actually, there's six principles of surrender. These are the first two. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, rakshishya titi goptritve. How does it go? Rakshishya titi vishvaso
goptritve varnam.
Okay, there you go. Why don't you read? You got the translation there?
What's in the purple?
Well, basically what it's saying, six principles of surrender, we just mentioned the first two. Accept things favorable for Krishna consciousness, reject things unfavorable. Then, see Krishna as your protector. See Krishna as your maintainer. Make the mission of Krishna, your mission, whatever's in Krishna's interest, accept that as your interest and execute that. And always be very meek and humble. These are the six principles of surrender, symptoms of surrender, principles of surrender, given by Srila Sanatana Goswami in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Actually, it appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, but otherwise it's referred to in Bhagavad Gita in one of the purports. So we need to do like this. Gradually, as we progress, we'll become more inclined in natural ways, not in forced ways, but in natural ways, to do these things. But in the meantime, we need to make that effort. In the meantime, we need to make that effort to maintain the standards in a conscious way. And Krishna really appreciates that. Just like you may know the story, what's the story? Yes. That Krishna Krishna killed Shishupal. Shishupal was a great demon, and Krishna killed him, cut his head off with the Sudarshan Chakra. So Krishna, he pulled his Sudarshan Chakra out so quickly. You know, in the westerns, quick draw. Jesse James, or whoever it is, Wild Bill Hickok, we were brought up on his things, I'm afraid, as children. So, fast draw. Krishna was very fast with the Sudarshan Chakra. Just zoop. People couldn't even see. But then suddenly there was Shishupal's head falling off, and there was the chakra returning to Lord Krishna. They couldn't even see how quickly he threw it. In fact, Krishna threw it so quickly he cut his finger. Draupadi was there, and she saw this, and she quickly took the end of her sari, and believe it or not, ladies, no, I shouldn't say that, but she just grabbed the edge of her sari and ripped a piece of the cloth off and wrapped it around Krishna's finger to stop the bleeding, transcendental bleeding. And Krishna said, oh, thank you so much. I'm so sorry now your sari is damaged like that. What are we going to do? And Draupadi said, no, don't worry, please. I'm happy to have been able to serve you. So then, just a little later, not long after, not a very long time, was that gambling match in which Yudhisthira lost everything and then lost Draupadi also. And you know the story. She was won by the other side. Dushasana wanted to just show off and sort of gloat. Just see, she is ours. We can do what we like with her. You can't do anything. So he wanted to undress her in public, even in front of her husbands and everybody. So he started pulling off the sari, and Draupadi was resisting. But she couldn't really resist much, because he's such a big, powerful warrior. So she let go with one hand and called out, hey Krishna, hey Govinda, surrendering to Krishna but holding on with one hand still. And what happened? Nothing, except the sari was being pulled away more and more. And then she realized, I just cannot do anything at all. And she let go with both hands, held her hands up in the... This is the surrender mudra. You know what a mudra is? Hand gesture. This is the surrender mudra. Held her hands up and just called out, hey Krishna, hey Govinda. And then Krishna incarnated as the endless sari. And her honor was saved. And Dushasana was defeated. He had to give up. And she was still dressed. So, this was a reciprocation for her tearing off that little piece of cloth from her sari for Krishna's finger. So Krishna appreciates. Krishna appreciates, and he protects his devotees. Rakshishya titi, gopchatre, Shishya Titi Vishvasa. He protects his devotees, and he appreciates even the small efforts. Even the devotee makes some small effort, beginning devotee, but Krishna appreciates so much. Just see how he's appreciating Sanatana Goswami. Of course, Sanatana Goswami is a very great devotee anyway, but still, Lord Chaitanya's point is very universal. This maintaining of the Vaishnava standards, it is the ornament of the devotee. It decorates the devotee. The devotee, of course, generally wears simple clothes and things like that. So in a crowd, a devotee may not stand out as being very fashionable. You know, in the Western fashion scene, I don't know exactly what the latest is, but one year is you have to wear the shirt, it has stripes going this way. Next year, you have to wear the shirt with stripes going that way. And if you have a shirt with stripes going this way next year, oh, what sort of silly fool are you? I was in Durban Airport many years ago, in the good old days when it was just down the road from the temple, waiting for an aeroplane early in the morning to fly up here. And some business type man just comes walking through. And there's just a few people around. He looked at me and he said, "I guess it makes your fashion choices a lot simpler, doesn't it?" Because these clothes and the saris, also for the ladies, they've been in fashion for millions of years. Really? So, yes. Krishna. So we don't worry too much. Even, you know, ladies generally, of course, they sort of, you know, the cosmetics industry. There's men's cosmetics. But I don't know what the figures are, but I think it's something like 90% of the cosmetics industry is for ladies. Yeah. And the fashion clothing industry, you know, the vast majority is for ladies and so on like that. Hope you didn't mind me saying that, ladies. But as far as I'm aware, it's true. But even our Vaishnav ladies, they don't wear, you know, the fancy saris and bangles all the way up to the shoulder. And what? Nose rings, ear rings, chin rings, and what other rings? Eye rings, and top of the earrings, and bottom of the earrings. So our ladies, you know, they're definitely more restrained than the materialistic ladies, no doubt. So what is the real beauty of a devotee? Just like we mentioned earlier, the physical change. What is the physical change when you become a devotee? Six fingers, no longer just five, or something like that. No. The devotee is smiling. And to be happy, to be really happy, What an honor, what an opulence that is. What an opulence to really be happy. Oh, it's amazing. People in material life, some of them are quite opulent materially. But they don't have that opulence. They can't smile. The only time they can smile is maybe if someone else makes a mistake, then they can laugh at them. But that's not nice. We understand sarcasm is humor in the mode of ignorance. It's humor in tamagun. So this becomes the opulence of the devotee, the character, the quality of the devotee's character, and the quality of the devotee's life. This is their opulence, and this is their beauty. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was asked, how can you recognize a devotee? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, because he or she is a perfect gentleman or gentlewoman. This is how you can recognize them. And, you know, Kali Yuga is so degraded, and it's becoming more degraded. And to meet people of real character, quality people, is becoming more and more rare. And it'll become more and more rare. Yes. So we need for our own sakes to maintain the standards. They will protect us. They will protect us. Just like you know the story about Krishna when he first went herding the cows on the first day. It's mentioned by Jiva Goswami and Gopal Champu. Everybody gave him gifts. He was only three. Going out for the first day herding the calves. Everyone gave him gifts. A stick for herding the cows, the calves. A rope for herding the calves. A buffalo horn, even a flute. And Mother Yashoda gave him a pair of very fancy little shoes with the pointed toe that turns up and with jewels multicolored and an umbrella, similar multicolored umbrella, and a servant to carry the umbrella. And Mother Yashoda told Krishna, now you're going out through the forests, climbing the hills and, you know, the rocks and the thorns are there. So you wear these shoes and you're outside, you'll be outside the whole day. So the umbrella will keep you shaded. And Krishna refused. He says, I'll only take these things if you provide four similar shoes for each calf. And an umbrella with a servant for each calf. There were 900,000 calves. And Mother Yashoda said, Krishna, they're just animals. They don't need these things. But you're human, you take them. But Krishna refused. No, I will not take anything better than the cows, because they are our religion. They're our lives. How can I take something better? And Krishna spoke this famous little sutra. Dharmo rakshati rakshataha. He who protects dharma becomes protected by the same dharma. It is a self-sustaining process. You protect dharma, you maintain your standards of Krishna consciousness, they will maintain you. Yeah. You don't need to make any extraneous effort beyond just maintaining your Krishna consciousness. And your Krishna consciousness will maintain and protect you. Very important. So it's following the footsteps of Srila Sanatana Goswami. Maintain those standards. And in due course, gradually more and more, we'll become more inclined to act in Krishna conscious ways. They'll start coming more naturally and more spontaneously. But in the meantime, we should be careful to maintain the standards and not just become sloppy. And in the name of being spontaneous, lower our standards of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. When are we going to? Afterwards?
Yeah, after question.
Okay. Any comment or question? Yes.
I thought about maintaining dharma of other people.
Maintaining the dharma of other people.
Protecting their dharmas.
Well, as preachers, this is what preaching means. We're trying to protect the dharma or rescue the dharma, first of all, because they've lost it, most of them. So we're trying to rescue their dharma. That's what preaching means. And we should make that effort. Try to preach to the people we meet and not become complacent and just think, well, we're okay. And, you know, if they're not following properly, that's their problem. Am I answering your question?
Yes, but I don't have a lot of frustration with people outside. I mean, with devotees in temple, if something doing something wrong, could I correct them?
You could?
Correct them.
Oh, correct them. If they do something wrong, you should try and correct them nicely. Yeah, that's true.
Quite difficult.
Sometimes, well, it may be difficult because they may react. And if they react, thing is, you should try. But if they react, in other words, you're not successful. You failed. You tried, but you couldn't do it. But if it's important, then, you know, the particular point involved, then you should bring it to the attention of some higher authority who may be able to do it better. And that's the principle, at least. That's the principle, how to address these things.
Some people could get cry.
Could cry?
Yeah. If someone could get
crying in ecstasy. Little do they know. Well, we have to do it nicely. We have to learn how to do it nicely. That makes a big difference. You know, generally devotees are sincere and, you know, they want to do the right things. But correcting people is an extremely sensitive thing. Extremely sensitive. But it's important, so one should try and learn how to do it. Some trial and error may be there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So now